Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, High School's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Laura, Kristen, and Karen. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're going to kick things off first by talking about Once Upon a Time in Wonderland tonight. And that episode was called Dirty Little Secrets. So let's get started. What did you guys think? Thumbs up, thumbs down, maybe somewhere in the middle. Karen, you want to kick it off?
Sure. I really liked this episode. I just thought it was really good, and it shows how good this show really can be. And it was kind of a slow episode. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of like action, but we got a lot of really good backstory, and we got a really good look at some of the characters, particularly the Red Queen and Cyrus. And I just thought that what they were able to do with that, with a lot of exposition and dialogue and stuff, was just really interesting. So I actually really, really liked this episode.
I quite enjoyed it as well. You know, it's still not quite as good for me as Once Upon a Time, but I did rather enjoy seeing the guy from Smash show up as one of Cyrus's brothers because yes. I loved that show and I was so happy to see him. So that was a nice little surprise. I didn't see it coming. And I liked that we got a little bit of twist action. Like, we never really get the twists that we've gotten in Once Upon a Time. So it was nice to kind of see that have its day in Wonderland too. So it's looking up for me. I'm hopefully optimistic that it'll continue to get better and better.
For me, it was one word: Jabberwocky made the episode. It was definitely for me the best episode all season. I was like, man, could we not have had something of this level earlier in the season? But loved the Jabberwocky, and every single scene I was like glued to her despite the god-awful hair, but it was really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I really like this episode. It's definitely a step in the right direction. I'm not sure if it's a little too late, but I did enjoy this episode, and I particularly enjoyed, like Karen said, the backstory, especially on Cyrus, because here we think he's this loving, perfect, wonderful genie, and really he's not. He had some trickery in his background and some things that he did that weren't the right choice, and I love the twist at the end when we find out who his mother is. I think that is kind of brilliant, to be honest. And I think it gives us an entirely different look at why Amara was working with Jafar in the first place. So, but we can get into that talk in a little bit, but I really did enjoy that twist. So let's talk about quotes. I had one from this one, and it's from the Red Queen, and it's, "You can dispense with the insufferable small talk, Jafar, or is that your idea of torture?" So did any of you guys have quotes as well?
I had another Red Queen quote, which probably won't surprise anybody, but it was when she said, "Tell the people that the battle for Wonderland is about to begin." And I just really like this because it was nice to see her so impassioned by something that didn't have to do with herself, and it was just cool to see that stronger side of her.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that more and more now that she's reunited with Will and that she's with the others as well. We're seeing more of what Anastasia was in the beginning, which I really enjoy it in her character. Does anyone else have a quote?
Mine comes from Cyrus, and he's talking to the Red Queen, and he says, "Your former subjects were willing to let you get eaten alive by mum rats." I just love it.
It doesn't really speak too highly of her leadership skills, I guess. No, does it?
Yeah, really.
All right, so let's kick off this conversation talking about Cyrus and his brothers, which is kind of the opening scene. And Cyrus was a cheat at cards. Who knew?
I was so surprised. Like you were saying, you know, Cyrus has been this sort of like wise and stable person that Alice has put up on a pedestal, that I think by default we've sort of put up on a pedestal. And to find out that he was tricky like this, and like he wasn't even really the best of his brothers, he might have even been the worst out of the three of them, was really surprising. But I like that they were going in this direction. It's good to see that he has some humanity and some faults.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of really surprised me because he's the oldest brother, so he basically bosses the other two brothers around and tells them this is what we have to do in order to save mom. And they go to the waters, the special waters. I thought he said he was the oldest, didn't he? Did I miss that?
The other one did.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think Dev from Smash was the oldest one.
Okay. Sorry. I just kind of heard it and I thought it was him that had said it, but, and either way, he's still bossy for, even if he's not the older brother. He's still very bossy. So I thought that was really interesting. And so that was the flashback at the very beginning. And when we move forward into real time, we have Cyrus and Alice discussing that they have to go to these special waters, the Well of Wonders. And the Red Queen kind of fills them in that the Well of Wonders runs all under Wonderland. It runs everywhere. It basically hits all, like, places. So she tells them how to get there. And Cyrus and Alice go off to find the entrance to the Well of Wonders so that he can address the issue of releasing his brothers. And then Anna and Will go off on their own to kind of set a distraction. So what did you guys think about this whole Well of Wonders? Like, the idea of it?
I loved the idea of it. I also think the woman who rose from the well was creepy as hell.
But, oh my God.
But I have to tell you, and I think it's probably maybe just me, but the entire time I was incredibly distracted because I was having this weird brain crossover moment with Doctor Who and the Waters of Mars episode because I just kept hearing like Waters of Mars music and I thought she sort of was starting to look like the crazy people from that episode. If you follow Doctor Who, you know what I mean.
See, I thought she looked like the creepy like little scared girl from like The Grudge or something.
Yeah,
that's one of those demon children.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, it was just all like, I was just like, and there's water dripping out of her mouth, and oh my God. Yeah, no, I was just like, wow. I just found her creep-tastic and the little head movements, and it was, it was good and scary good.
Can we talk about the fact that her name is Nyx?
We were getting there. You're jumping ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, we're talking about her now.
Yes, her name is Nyx, and I do have that written down because Nyx is the guardian of, well, in this instance, she's the guardian of the Well of Wonders. In Greek mythology, she is she the goddess of war? Or something
like that? No, guardian of the underworld, right?
She's the guardian of night.
Right? She's the personification of night.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, yeah.
Somewhere in there. I knew it
Thank
was one
you,
of
House of Hades.
Yes. So she has to do with night. So I was like, wait a minute. So once again, we have this once upon a time kind of cross-referencing names from Greek mythology, but not really, like, I don't know, it's weird.
I was really excited when I heard her name, but the two stories don't really match up. I mean, what she was in Wonderland really has nothing to do, as far as I know, with what she is in Greek mythology, but I like the idea that maybe it has some relation. I mean, that's always been something that I really wanted to see on Once Upon a Time, and we've gotten a few glimpses of it, so it would be cool to see it here as well.
Yeah, I don't think that'll cross over well, because she's like barely ever seen. And she's, like, in the shadows rather than in the well. But I don't know. Maybe.
Also, while we're talking the Well of Wonders, I'm just wondering if everything in Agrabah is called Of Wonders. Like, we all know of the Cave of Wonders. And now we've got the Well of Wonders. So I'm wondering if there's, like, a Fountain of Wonders and a, you know, like, House of Wonders. And, you know, like, it just made me giggle. Because I was like, is that the only name they have in Agrabah?
We've run out of adverbs.
Blank of Wonders.
Exactly.
I have no idea. That's really funny. So, yeah, I was very intrigued by the idea of the Guardian of the Well and what her purpose is and how she works. Because they also cross-referenced her with Fates. And they said that she's, like, her actions are related to the Fates. So she can send the Fates after them, if I interpreted that correctly when they were talking about it.
It definitely had something to do with that. I don't know if, like, she carries out the work of the Fates or something, because she was the one that went after the brothers in the end, but there was definitely talk there of the Fates.
Well, it almost seemed like she is, like, the corrector of things that get in the way of fate. Like, she was talking, you know, you can only use this water if it wasn't originally, you know, supposed to be their fate, if something kind of intervened before their time. So maybe she's like working with the Fates almost. I don't know.
I don't know. It just seemed very, again, another kind of cross-reference into Greek mythology with the mention of the Fates. So I don't know. It's all very interesting. So we see the Jabberwocky head into where Lizard was. She's looking for Will. And she realizes that Lizard is dead. So she takes her eyes back to Jafar. I will say this for Wonderland. It goes down a creepier, more gruesome path than Once Upon a Time does. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, the eyeballs on a stick. I was like, are those eyeballs on a stick? Those are eyeballs on a stick. I'm like, oh my god, he's got like an eyeball popsicle.
I was like, really?
Kind of disturbed.
Yeah, because it had like all the like nerves and everything still attached. Yes! Like, we couldn't just go with eyeballs.
I mean,
we couldn't just make them look like glass eyeballs. We had to have the very realistic, you know, version.
Right.
So,
like, am I watching The Walking Dead or Once Upon a Time in Wonderland? It was just, it's not like I've never seen that kind of stuff before, but it was like, I wasn't really expecting it on ABC at 8 o'clock at night.
No, it was very odd. So we have that. So he figures out that Anna was the last person, or Anna was the person that took Will from that, which is unfortunate. Because then he knows he needs to send the Jabberwocky after Anna. So we have that happening, which is kind of scary because the Jabberwocky is just a very, very awkward, weird, creepy being that I would never want to have to come across ever.
I love her, though. I mean, I don't really know the actress or anything, but she does a fantastic job of just, like, all of her movements and the way that she sits and stands and moves around is just so creepy. And, I mean, it's hard to really be afraid of anything on this show. I mean, even Jafar is, he's kind of creepy, but he's so over the top. But, like, she is actually a frightening villain, and it's nice to finally see that.
Yeah, I do like her in that regard, that she is so kind of creepy, and it's nice to have that, like, creepiness coming around, because, again, like you said, Jafar is not creepy in any way. He's more kind of laughable in some sense, but... So, one of the big things that comes out of this is Anna and Will are walking kind of through the forest, and Anna professes her love for Will, like, to an extent that is just beyond. She says she won't leave, she would never leave, because she needs to be with Will, and she knows that the only way to save everyone is to get rid of Jafar, and that's kind of her goal. That's why she's staying, but mostly that she really loves Will, and she would never want to leave him behind, which I thought was kind of interesting. What did you guys think about that whole profession of hers?
Well, considering she, you know, left him behind once before, I'm hoping that this is her, like, actually trying to turn a corner, like, saying, I'm never going to make that mistake again, I'm going to be better, and that this isn't just, you know, she loves Will because she isn't being offered anything better, you know, like, I'm really hoping that this is a turnaround for her.
I do, too. I really like this change in her, but at the same time, I think Will can do so much better, and I hope that she becomes stronger on her own because of this, and it's not necessarily like, oh, you know, Will suddenly changes his mind after everything that she put him through, and all of a sudden they have a happy ending. Just right now, that doesn't really seem realistic to me.
When the Jabberwocky catches Anna, she demands that Will go back into his bottle, hoping that she can hide him from the Jabberwocky. And she's fully aware of who the Jabberwocky is and what the Jabberwocky can do, because she tells Will not to be afraid because the Jabberwocky feeds on fear. So what did you guys think of that scene with Anna and the Jabberwocky? Because I thought it was so cool that she kind of manifested a sword and thought that she could actually take on the Jabberwocky.
I thought that was really cool. I also love the fact that the Jabberwocky, like, sucks all the sound out of the air. I think that's an incredible concept right there. But I know in my mind, I kept going through, you've seen the Jabberwocky before, how did you defeat it the first time? Like, to me, that just kept going through my brain. Like, she knew enough of what the Jabberwocky was to be afraid of it, and I felt like, you've faced this evil before, what did you do the last time? Or, I don't know, it brought up a lot of curiosity for me.
Do we know who defeated her the first time? I mean, obviously Alice is the one, like, in the stories that does it, but Is she the one that did it last time?
Actually, no, in the story, Alice isn't. It's just a poem that she's entertained by.
Because I thought there was, like, a special sword. I could be totally wrong.
I can Google. Hold on.
I'm almost positive it's not. It's a nonsense poem. Alice is being entertained by a complete nonsense poem.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I'm just thinking of the movie because, like, the one with
Johnny
Depp.
Oh, with Tim Burton or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Because yeah, no, they talk that's... about the Vorpal sword and, like, in the movie, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the poem. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, that's legit part of the poem, but Alice isn't wielding anything. Alice just literally is a bystander who hears the poem, but she's not a participant in the action of the poem. At least not in Lewis Carroll books.
It says, 1, 2, 1, 2, and through and through, the Vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head, he went galumping back.
Right.
And it's a boy that does it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, that answers that question. So, we don't... The Jabberwocky is pretty all-powerful, and the problem is, Jafar's the only one with the appropriate blade to actually kill her, and... I think she maybe has Jafar in a place where he won't kill her, even though he says he will. Yeah. I kind of get this feeling that he's not going to be strong enough to do it if the time comes.
I just feel like Jafar has overplayed his hand, that despite the fact that he feels like he's in control right now, I feel very much that there's another whole level of game going on here, and the Jabberwocky is in absolute control. I don't know what that game is, but I feel like everybody's being played right now.
Right, because what's her objective? I mean, she's free. Yes, he has the sword, but she's already proven that she can get inside of his head and pretty much take him down without even touching him. So she... You know, she's doing all of his bidding, but there must be something to gain on her side as well, or else she wouldn't be sticking around.
Yeah, I don't know, but I feel like Jafar really didn't think this one through. At all. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what her end game is, because it does seem like there's so much more to her than what we're getting. Do you know what I mean? And she's so easily, like, defeats people. And so it can easily take them on and use their fears against them. So I don't know why Jafar thinks that he would be immune to that. So we learned something really interesting during this kind of time frame where Jafar is talking to the Jabberwocky about his other female partner and how, you know, he realized he didn't need her anymore. And then we get a flashback to Cyrus and his brothers saving their mother, who was burned because of Cyrus's card cheating. And when... Once they've dumped the magic water on her and they remove the bandages, you see who she is, and lo and behold, she is Amara. Amara is the same woman that was working with Jafar to find the genies in the first place. And now we know why. So what did you guys think about that reveal?
Totally surprised.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Yes.
I knew it was going to be significant because they were, like, waiting so long to take off the bandages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, we're going to recognize her.
Part of me thought that she might be some version of the Jabberwocky because the Jabberwocky seems... Because when they were talking to the lady the creepy lady in the pool, she was like, you know, your mother's time has come. You have to let her go. And if you don't, there will be consequences. So I was thinking that the Jabberwocky was the consequence.
Right. Well, you know what also, I think I didn't think it was coming either, because Cyrus has said more than one time, oh, this happened, you know, I've been in a bottle over 100 years, my mother's been dead for over 100 years ago. Like, we've had that 100-year timeline reference several times, and I guess it did not occur to me that Jafar had such a long life with youth as well. Like, I don't know why that didn't occur to me. But I think that's also why I was caught by surprise. Because, like, even Cyrus was saying, oh, no, it's 100 years ago, my mother still cannot be alive. Like, it just, I don't know, I guess those factors didn't play. I think that's why I was very surprised.
But it's not the same for Jafar. She found Jafar when he was a child.
Oh, that's true. So maybe he doesn't necessarily have to have been 100 years old. Okay.
No, he's not, but she is. And all along, it was her end goal to find the genies. So I'm wondering if she found a way to release them from the bottles, and that's why she was searching for them.
Maybe.
So I'm wondering if Jafar thinks he has and understands the spell, But he doesn't because she didn't tell him the full truth and why she was doing it. Because he changed her into a snake, which isn't really helpful. The snake staff.
Wouldn't it be awesome if Jafar thinks this spell is going to be awesome and horrible and it really just releases them? Like ah, joke's on you.
Or if what it does is releases the three genies but makes Jafar the genie for the bottles instead.
Ooh,
switches their places. Because you have to think, she wasn't just trying to take the genie's power. She wanted to free her sons. So what would that look like?
Yeah, true. Like, that would be really cool. Like, I'd love to see that happen.
I would like that little twist. It would be really cool, actually. In the meantime, Alice and Cyrus they head to the pool of the Well of Wonders, and they speak with the guard at the two doors, and Alice realizes that he's a liar, so she figures out the riddle of the man at the door, and they find the right door to the Well of Wonders. In the meantime, Cyrus is adamant that he does not want Alice to go with him. It's something he has to do on his own. Primarily, that is because he doesn't want Alice to know of the things that he did, would be my guess. And so, of course, Alice being Alice, she sneaks in and follows him and hears everything that happens at the Well of Wonders. What did you guys think about that? Was it right for Alice to sneak in and listen anyway?
I feel like in a way it was kind of betraying his trust, but at the same time, he was so obviously keeping something from her that, especially for Alice, like, she's such a curious person. I would have been way more surprised if she hadn't followed him.
And in the reality of it is, she did have to know about his past, I think, in some way. Like, that had to come about. So, it's understandable, I guess. Alright, so from the Well of Wonders, they know what's going on, so they head out. And once again, the lovely, creepy lady in the Well of Wonders, Nyx, tells Cyrus that A, his mother is still alive, and that B, the only way the curse can be broken is if he returns the water he stole. So, my assumption from this statement would be that he is to return his mother to the Well of Wonders so that she can take back the water, which in turn, I believe, would probably kill his mother. What do you get?
Yeah,
I think that's right.
I think the mother's death is what's kind of inevitable here, but I'm still confused as to how this water gets returned. Part of it was used. I don't understand how you return it, so I'm a little confused.
Well, that, and they spent a lot of precious moments in that room when they were reviving his mother, showing us the water on the sand. Like, there were, like, four different shots of water dripping on the sand, and I was like, do they have to collect every last drop? Like, what do they mean by this?
Well, I think that was because that pool created so that she could come through it and then claim them as genies.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense now. I just kept looking at it thinking, does he have to go find, like, that specific area of sand to return that water to? Because that would just be a really crazy.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, that does kind of make sense because she says return the water. So I was definitely thinking the same thing. But I think it is inevitable that he's going to have his mom go into the well. And I mean, she's not going to be able to survive it. She was on her deathbed to begin with when they brought the water to her. So I don't think there's really any way around it. My question is she going to be willing to do that? Because when we last saw her, and I don't know if this is just manipulation on her part of Jafar or anything like that, but she wasn't exactly the best person. She was pretty feared in the little town that she was in. So I wonder if she's changed a lot over the years and if that's going to affect anything.
I don't know. That's a really good question because I feel like so much of her is different, and yet at the same time, I'm wondering if the reason she's different is because of the loss of her sons and the constant search for them. Only time will tell. So after that incident with Cyrus and Nyx once again, they set off, and we know where Amara is, but Cyrus has no idea where Amara is. So I'm not really sure how they're going to figure out that Amara is actually the snake staff. I'm waiting for that connection, which I think is going to be really tricky to figure out. But, you know.
I wonder if the Jabberwocky is going to be able to turn her back or something, because she looked kind of interested in the staff for a couple of seconds there. And that would be a way, I think, to kind of get the plot moving forward, is if Amara came back and that's how Cyrus discovered that, like, where she was.
That would be kind of cool if they cut some kind of deal with the Jabberwocky. I don't know. It'll be interesting because she's, at this point in time, she's the only one who knows that Amara is the staff.
Unless the queen and the knave find out, because they are there. Or maybe the queen already knows? I don't know.
I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see how it works out. So from there, we know that, let's see, Jafar has Anna and Will in like a birdcage kind of thing. And he sets the Jabberwocky on Anna. And at first, Anna is very strong. And Will even tries to tell her to wish Jafar out of Wonderland. But before she can speak the wish, Jafar shuts her up and sticks the Jabberwocky on her. The Jabberwocky goes inside of Anna's head and pulls at all of her fears and the things that Anna is terrified of that made Anna horrible. And one of the most interesting things that gets pulled out of Anna's head at this time, and it's very, like, passing in comment, is that she's jealous of her stepsister getting the prince. All those Cinderella theories we had.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I mean, because, I mean, what other fairy, I mean, I couldn't think of a single other fairy tale that dealt in stepsisters.
I think that's the only one, and given that her name is Anastasia, and Cinderella had a stepsister named Anastasia, I think we're good.
Yeah, I definitely think we got this one right. As soon as she said it, I gasped and got really excited, because I was like, yes, like, we saw it coming, like, congratulations us. So, yeah, I think we're right on target there.
I wasn't really that surprised. I guess I already kind of assumed that was a thing, so I just kind of let it slide by. But, I mean, I did pick up on it, and I think it's cool anytime we get references like that.
Very true. I like it when we kind of get not just the main, like, Cinderella, but when we get kind of, like, their relatives, too, in different ways, because it's always fun to look at them in different ways. So let's see. Oh, so once Anna makes her three wishes, Jafar takes the bottle and Will and puts it with the other bottles, and he's getting ready to start his nefarious plan with the genies. Interestingly, Anna gets put in a cell. She's not killed. She gets put up in a cell and held prisoner by Jafar and the Jabberwocky, and a Tweedle comes in, her Tweedle, not the one she beheaded, obviously. Her Tweedle comes in to talk to her and says, you know, I've brought you some food. I'm going to help you escape. We'll get out of Wonderland. But Anna is very adamant that he needs to go and he needs to warn Alice and Cyrus because Wonderland is doomed. And she's really concerned about the people of Wonderland, but she's even more concerned about Cyrus and Alice and what they're going to do next. And I thought that was really interesting because it's so not within her character. What did you guys think?
Yeah, it was interesting because I guess she's assuming she can do nothing at this point to help Will, or he's safe, or perhaps he's safe enough in the bottle. I don't know. So she's helping the only people she can help. I thought that was an interesting dynamic. Or if she can get those two to run, they are their only hope. I mean, I feel like I'm channeling Princess Leia here, but they're the only two that if they get out, they could possibly do something. Whereas what is anybody else going to do with this situation? Nobody else has the skill set or the knowledge to possibly help them.
I really love that she's putting all these people before her instead of herself, especially Alice. I mean, we all know how much she hates Alice, and yet she's like, you need to warn them. They need to get out of here. And I think it's sad that she's given up because she is pretty powerful and she does know magic. But, I mean, we all saw how easily the Jabberwocky broke her. So I guess maybe she's kind of just resolute in the fact that she's not going to be able to do anything because the Jabberwocky knows all of her weaknesses now. But I just, you know, this is the Red Queen that I've been wanting to see from the beginning, someone who has a conscience and is really trying to be a better person. And it's channeling a lot of what we love, I think, about Regina. And I'm really glad that they decided to go in that direction for her.
Yeah, and one of the things I always love about Regina is she's always got some sort of plan or something that she can do. And so I'm kind of hoping that the Red Queen has something up her sleeve. Like, she might seem hopeless, and maybe that's how she wanted the Tweedle to see her, so that he would get Alice and Cyrus out or tell them to leave Wonderland. Because I do kind of agree, maybe they're the, you know, the last hope or something. But maybe, you know, Anna is thinking, if I'm here, you know, I'm in proximity to Jafar and to what's going on, maybe I can do something. Like, maybe not all hope is lost. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for at the moment.
The preview for next week's episode looks really good, because it looks like Jafar's plan to set the curse thing, that the spell that he's working on, into motion comes across a little bump in the form of Will's heart not being where it's supposed to be.
Right.
And did you guys pick up on the fact that Cyrus and Alice have to go to Storybrooke to get his heart, because that's where he left it?
I knew it. I'm the one who's been joking around saying it's in the freezer at Granny's, but I would seriously, I would love to know where in Storybrooke he left it. But yeah, I think we definitely kind of, considering that's where the rabbit picked him up from, I think it was definitely the logical place for it to have been.
Yeah, so there's that. And there's Barbara Hershey coming in as Cora, which kind of is exciting. So I'm hoping that with this episode that was, you know, it had a really good momentum. It had a lot going on in it that was interesting with some twists. I'm hoping this continues next week, which looks like it has a lot to offer. Okay, so now we're going to start our Once Upon a Time discussion, and this episode was called Witch Hunt, and it was so, so good. So, okay, thumbs up or thumbs down, everyone?
Oh, mega thumbs up for me. I mean, I had favorite episodes in the first half of the season, but second half of the season, easily my favorite episode so far.
I really like this one as well. I saw the big twist coming, so that wasn't really anything special, but besides that, I just like all the different directions that the characters are going in right now.
Despite me being really frustrated that they didn't recognize that there were faces that weren't there last time, like, I just kept going, there's got to be somebody there you don't recognize. Suspect them. But other than that, honest to God, it was a really great episode. And I loved, like, all the intercutting and the Robin Hood and Regina stuff. And it was just a really, really fun episode.
I loved it. There was so much. And we got a glimpse at Whale and Red and all the people we've missed for so long. It was so good. Yeah, I just loved it. So,
oh my God. Red, I like forgot that she hadn't been there for a while. And so she was on screen and I was like, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden I actually yelled, oh my God, Red. It just like took me a few seconds, but it was really exciting.
Can I tell you, I did a bouncy clap. Like, I literally did this little, like, oh, it's Red. I mean, I did a total bouncy clap, and my husband looked at me and went, please stop doing that.
I can see him doing that. Yeah. He's like, what are you doing? Yeah, it was just, I was so excited. And then we got the glimpse of Whale in the audience later. I was like, oh, hey, you exist. So it was, I don't know, it was just really cool. All right, so let's do some quotes, because I feel like this was the never-ending quote fest tonight. I'll start because I have this one, and Laura, I know you added onto it because I didn't have time to type it all in, but this was like by far one of my most favorites. And it's from, of course, Grumpy. And he starts off with, are we talking East or West? And this is in reference to the Wicked Witch. And he's like, one, you kill by dropping a house on her, and one, it's a bucket of water. So he's, like, having this conversation with Emma and everyone. They're all like, really, Grumpy? How do you know? What is with you? So I loved that one. And then the other one came from Prince Charming. And he's like, this isn't a personal vendetta? Shocking. I thought that one was really good, too. And that one was in reference to Regina.
Mine was from Hook. I feel like all of my quotes are always from Hook. But, like, he's just so good. This is when he's talking to Charming and Mary Margaret, and they're talking about the fact that she is very pregnant, and Hook goes, almost time for harvest, and you can't even remember the planting. Bad luck, mate. Oh my God.
That is so inappropriate, yet so hysterical at the same time. I love it.
So great. Well, that's okay. Mine is almost always an Emma Hook moment because they just, those two crack me up. Emma, when she said, what, the Wicked Witch of the West? And it was like dead silent. And then she goes, seriously? She's real too? And then Hook says the daughter of Prince Charming and Snow White.
That one
just
was,
love it.
That one was really good. These two, last two are from Regina. And she says, I don't care if the Lollipop Guild is protecting her. I can take down that shield on my own. In reference to the Wicked Witch getting inside the castle. Great. Yes! Every Oz reference is coming to life. I love it.
Well, it was just like 5 minutes of one zinger after the other. It was fantastic.
And then the last one was, go ahead, bring it, Greenie. Kind of like that one. Regina being very, very sassy. And then she had one to Robin Hood, where she's like, I haven't had something in a very long time. And he's like, what's that? Someone to destroy. And she had that look on her face. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to end well.
I loved that line, though, because even though she's going to set out to destroy somebody, it's a bad guy. And I was like, yes, you know, Regina is still very much herself. But at the same time, she's working with the rest of them. And I really love where her character is going this season.
I know, but how do we know the Wicked Witch of the West is bad? We know that she's done this to them, but how do we know that she's bad? Because I have a feeling there's so much more into there. Now that we learn some things later at the end of the episode, my mind always goes back to the play Wicked. You know what I mean? Like, there's always that element. So, go ahead, Laura.
Well, who's her father? Like, I felt like this was the, like, even with in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland also, I felt like this was the week of like unknown parentage and siblings and things. Like I just was stuck on, well, obviously Cora is her mother. Who's her, you know, who's your daddy? Like I just was like.
And when you say that, all I do is hear Keith Mars in my head. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I
don't know. That's one of the big things that I figured we would talk about later on as we got to it, because there's definitely that question. And at first, when she said Rumple, I thought she was saying that Rumple was her father, and I was like, oh, holy hell, that's going to go
too.
Bad.
I was just like, oh, hell no. Yeah, I was, and then I just went, Rumple, Regina, and yeah, I'm just having trouble with the gold man and everything with that again, too, so yeah.
All right, so we see one of the very first opening scenes is that a flying monkey attacks the group again, and Robin Hood's son is kind of standing in front of Regina. Clearly we know that the monkeys are after Regina, but she runs over, grabs the son and protects him, and then, I love this part, turns the flying monkey into a stuffed animal. She's like, yeah, no, I don't think so. But I loved it, and it's kind of one more moment in the newly minted saga of Regina and Robin Hood. So what did you guys think of that?
I have to tell you, I'm liking the Regina and Robin Hood dynamic much more than I thought I was going to. I thought I was going to be perpetually upset that we did not have Maid Marian, and I'm kind of shocked that it didn't matter to me.
I'm kind of the same way. But for like the opposite reason, I have very little to no investment in Robin Hood's story. Not that I don't like him or anything. I think, you know, whatever, it's fine. But that's never been a story that really stuck out to me. And yet I feel like I already care about him and I like his character on the show. And I'm really interested to see where the two of them go and how maybe Regina is going to change by being around him. I mean, obviously he's a thief, but he's also a very noble person. So I think that's going to be a really good influence for her.
I also think he's kind of an even match for her. Like, he's not necessarily all good or, you know, all evil, because yeah, he steals, but he does it for the poor. Like, you know, he's got a little bit of that, you know, hand in both pockets thing going on that Regina kind of does too. So I think they're a really great match, that neither one is, you know, is as sickeningly sweet as Charming and Snow or anything like that.
I really loved also that he basically drew down the arrow on her and is like, no, you're going to tell me what that is. And she's like, yeah, like, fine, whatever. And he's like, if you kill me, the arrow is still going to fly. And I was like, whoa, I just loved his dynamic. Just really loved his dynamic a lot.
Yeah, I think they had a lot of really cool scenes throughout this episode. And I think it just pushes us more towards the idea of them. And she keeps talking about how she has nothing to live for. And when she started to talk about true love's kiss, and I was like, oh, if you only knew, Regina, what you're saying, who you're saying it to, you have no idea, but this is so perfect. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed those moments between them throughout the episode. So I'm looking forward to see where that goes next.
You know what? I did have one, like, rather bizarre thing that, like, went through my head. It took me a while to realize who they were when they were back in Storybrooke, because they're all in their, you know, modern clothing, and they kind of look like they knocked over a cross between, like, Urban Outfitters and, like, Campmore. And I'm looking at them, and then it took me a minute to like, click. I'm going, oh, that's Little John. And then I keep wondering, like, they have regular clothes. Like, how did Hook not get regular clothes? Like, I'm still confused.
Hook just loves that leather jacket.
He just looks so good in it. Why does he need regular clothes?
I don't know.
A pirate must be a pirate. Yeah, I noticed that too, that they were in like normal street clothes. Even though they were a little different and a little funky, I really did like the way that they were dressed, actually. Oh, I thought it was cool.
Don't get me wrong. It was bringing the sexy. I was good with how Robin Hood was dressed. I was not having a problem, like I said, with the Urban Outfitter meet Campmore look. But it was like, and why is Hook still in pirate leather? So, you know, I was just like mildly
just be in pirate leather.
Just mildly. I was just mildly distracted with that.
Yeah, because everyone else is in normal clothes once again, except for Hook.
I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that he came back over earlier.
I know, but does the man not want to borrow clothes from David? Like,
yeah, like,
can you imagine that, though?
Right. Or, like, not for nothing.
Look in a sweater.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, my God.
A sweater vest.
Oh, my God. But seriously, Emma, at least, is always wearing her red leather jacket, but she changes her shirt. Like, does he never change out of the same leather outfit? I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting distracted and sidetracked here. But
too much leather for you. Step away from the leather.
Just the All man right. needs to change.
So we do find out, though, something about Hook. We find out that Hook was on his ship, and interestingly, he received a bird that gave him a note and the memory potion. So this is how he found out that they were in trouble and that he needed to go get Emma. Was from a bird and a memory potion. Now, birds are typically Snow White's thing, but she has no recollection of sending anything for Hook. So we don't know if it was her or not. Yeah.
I did love that line of, well, it was sent by a bird. It is rather your M.O., you know, and he assumed it was sent by the Charming. So I thought that was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if it really was her, if it was somebody else at work. Then we also have the concerning fact that people are missing from Storybrooke. Like, they're going missing. They're disappearing. And unfortunately, we learned the hard way what's been happening to them, because Little John gets stolen and bitten by a flying monkey, and then in the middle of Wales ER becomes a flying monkey. So if you're stolen, you seem to be changed into a flying monkey, which does not bode well for the people of Storybrooke.
I was like, holy aliens crossover. Like, I was waiting for the little monkey to pop out of his stomach or something. I mean, they really went for it there. I thought that was pretty amazing, too, how they did it.
I had some, like, Jumanji flashbacks.
Is that your cat?
Yes, sorry.
No, I just
want me to say that again.
I'm like, oh my God, she said Jumanji and she just got eaten by a lion.
Oh my. Whew, okay, we're getting silly. It must be late.
I had like this weird Jumanji flashback when I saw that.
Yeah, there's definitely... I like it, though. I love where this is going. There's just so much going on. It's so, like, one thing after another.
So, here's a question that I had. Because clearly Emma understands the story of the Wizard of Oz. Like, it's something that's in her head, in her cultural experience, as, like, a kid who grew up normally in the U.S. Surely someone is going to, like, report back that it is a flying monkey, and she will put together the whole Wicked Witch thing. Like, I mean, at a certain point, is not the flying monkey thing going to tip people off as to what's going on?
It took a while. A real long while. I mean, she even saw Walsh turn into a flying monkey, and she didn't bring it up until much, much
later.
It took a long time.
Not for nothing, but who else has flying monkeys? Would she have not thought that's what it is? So, I don't know.
Did she not ever watch TV around Thanksgiving and Christmas as a child?
Right,
because
right.
Let me tell you,
yeah.
It's on nonstop.
Right, right. Even if it didn't look like the MGM special versions, which obviously it doesn't, like, it was pretty obviously a monkey, and it flew. Like, what else could it have been?
Yeah, I don't know. What I think is really funny is that in the flashbacks of the Enchanted Forest, Belle gets it right away. Belle's like, oh, how can they be out of Oz?
Right.
And they kind of have, you know, she has that moment right away. So I don't know. I think it's funny that it did take her a little while to catch on.
Right, but all the rest of them know, because at least, Grumpy was astute enough to do the East and West thing. So, like, clearly, like, it's the Oz legend is obviously something is all in their conscience. So you would think they would have more of an understanding of, oh, of course, it's the Wicked Witch of the West. I'm just surprised they haven't put it together more.
Yeah. So we have a lot of different moments with Henry, because Henry is, you know, it's daytime now, Henry is awake, and they have to figure out how to explain this to him. Because he thinks they're there just on one of his mom's jobs. He doesn't understand why people may know him already. So they're all trying to downplay it. Like, Red tries to go and talk to him. She brings him his hot cocoa with cinnamon in it. And he's like, oh, hey. And she almost calls him by his name. But she's like, hey, kid, instead. So she kind of recovers. And then Snow tells Henry that she knows his mom because they were cellmates.
Banditry.
Which was fantastic. I'm
there,
sorry.
They're playing the harmonica together there in the big monkey. Oh my god.
It was so good. And then the one that's having the most difficulty, of course, is Regina. And it was a little gut-wrenching every time you saw her trying to interact with him. So there's the moment where she doesn't even know he's in the cafe and she turns around and sees him and drops her coffee and freaks out. Because she doesn't know that they're there. And it was so sad. What did you guys think?
I felt horrible. Just that look on her face it was really hard to watch. You could really feel how sad she was by the fact that she knew he didn't even know her.
Yeah, it was painful. And that happens a couple times throughout. So, I don't know. So then what Emma decides is that they're going to have a town meeting and that she's going to talk to everybody at once. So, they go into the middle of the town meeting and this is where we get a glimpse of Whale. And Emma starts to talk and Regina slides in the back and all of a sudden there's an argument and they all want to blame Regina. And Emma kind of sells it that she wants to blame Regina too. And then Regina's kind of like, well, if you want me to be wicked, that's what I'll be. Or whatever, evil, that's what I'll be. Because she's evil, the other one's wicked. So confusing. And so she kind of creates an earthquake and vanishes out of there. And in the audience, we see a non-green Wicked Witch of the West.
Otherwise, that would have made it really easy to figure out who the bad guy was.
Yeah, it would have been kind of like a neon sign, but what are you going to do? So she's non-green, and she's in the audience, which is interesting because... So she put this in play, and she brought herself there. So what? Her endgame must be huge. And I have a sneaking suspicion of what it might include, but... Because here's another interesting thing that she does... She starts talking with Snow at Granny's cafe, and Snow is reading a baby book and kind of freaking herself out as she's reading it about all the different things that you have to worry about for a baby, like cradle cap or something like that, where you get a scaly rash on the baby's head. So she was freaking herself out, and Zelina, who this Wicked Witch of the West is going by, says, oh, I was a midwife. I would love to help you with your baby. What is her interest in Snow White's baby?
That's clearly something
we're supposed to kind of question. Like, so she has an interest in this kid, and that's...
Right, and why?
Now we just have to wonder what it is.
So what's the blood relation? Or, yeah, a lot of questions.
I don't think it's a blood relation so much as Emma was the savior. Emma is magical. Emma is powerful. What will this child be?
Right. And I have to wonder if it has something to do with Henry. Like, I know that's weird, but she clearly said that she wanted to destroy Regina. And let's face it, the only thing Regina really has left is Henry. And so I just have a feeling that at some point maybe these two things are going to come together, but I really have no idea how.
Yeah, only like if you think about talking about powerful, in theory, the most powerful person should be Henry. If for no other reason, it's Emma. I mean, it's Charming and Snow's bloodline through Emma, and it's Rumple's bloodline through Neil. So you would think, no matter how powerful the baby of Charming and Snow is, you would think Henry would be more powerful than that.
It's all very interesting. Like, I just felt like so strongly that there was something about the baby that she needed or wanted. Like, there was something really relevant about that. So I don't know.
Is there something significant about her name? Because I know that's not like the name most of us know her by, but I don't know enough about any of that to really like make a call.
I don't know enough about it either. I mean, I read the book so long ago that it's not fresh enough in my memory to stick out.
Zelina means moon, light, shine, and heaven.
Yeah, and I can't come up with it, like, you know, spelling out a word or anything. I was thinking of that, but I couldn't come up with that either.
Yeah, I don't know.
And those sound like good things, not like wicked things.
Way to be contradictory, boys. Writing the show, gotta love it. So we have the flashback, and Regina's going in to let down the shield around the castle, and as she's doing it, Robin Hood comes around and he's like, you know, I'm going with you. You're not going by yourself. I can be really helpful. And she's flirtatiously adversarial, I would say, to him at this point in time. And he's very adamant that he's going. So the two go in and they kind of have their moments. And she insists she's going to make the sleeping potion. And he insists that no, she really shouldn't. But she kind of freezes him in his place and there's no getting around that. But the whole time, I just really loved their interaction throughout that whole sequence of scenes. I thought that was really good. And then we flash forward, and Regina's trying to make a different kind of potion. She was taking what was left in the bottle from what Emma was given and trying to recreate it to give it to Henry. And she figures if she can try and give it to herself as well, that she'll also remember. So if they can get this potion to work and be successful, then people can start to remember what really happened. It's not working, though. So Emma decides that they're going to con the town, which I think is a really cool idea. And when Emma tells her what they're going to do for the con, Snow goes, I know exactly who to tell. And the next scene cuts to Grumpy throwing open the door at Granny's and being like, you guys!
He was just waiting for that.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I love that of all people, Grumpy is the town gossip.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
He's just like the town crier. He like goes around yelling it everywhere. I love it. So I really love that play. Like, I thought it was, even though there were serious things going on, there was just a lot of play with it. And I just enjoy that when they do that in the show.
I really liked too when Regina and Emma were working together. I mean, that's because, let's face it, they're towing a line here with making this seem too much like season one of Once Upon a Time. I mean, we've got the curse back. We've got people missing their memories. Henry doesn't know this time instead of, and Emma does. So like they're doing subtle twists on it, but it's really going to be interesting going forward to see how they're going to kind of pitch this so that it's different enough to keep the show still interesting. I'm not entirely convinced that they're going to be able to pull it off yet, but, you know, just the fact that right from the beginning, Emma believes Regina, I think is a really strong step in the right direction. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah, I agree. I like it when they work together. Even if it was kind of covertly, it's just really enjoyable. I also think that the flashbacks to the Enchanted Forest are going to kind of inform what we're seeing in Storybrooke, and that's going to make it different. Whereas before, all of those flashbacks were, you know, backstory on people. This is more, you know, what have we missed? This is a whole different way of doing it. So I think that will help as well. I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell. And here's what tipped me off that we should be really aware that something was going on with the Wicked Witch of the West and Regina, because they mentioned blood magic not once, but twice.
Like 800 times.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Just and in I was case like, we didn't catch it the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me smack you in the face with some more blood magic talk. So I had a really sneaking suspicion that they were very well connected. And sure enough, they were. I love this ending scene between Regina and the Wicked Witch of the West in Storybrooke, in the Enchanted Forest, in the castle, because they're talking and the Wicked Witch of the West is so sure of herself. She is so sure that she's better than Regina and stronger and more powerful. And she's so sure that she can make Regina suffer. Now, we don't know why Regina necessarily is her target, except she just seems like a jealous, abandoned sister that Regina didn't know she had in the first place. What'd you guys think about that whole interaction?
Well, it was kind of nice to side with Regina for once, because you're thinking about Cora and all of the terrible things that Cora put Regina through. And you're like, you know, you were a little lucky not to have to deal with Cora growing up. Like, I kind of sided with Regina there. So it was kind of nice to not have to think twice about everything she was saying.
And I think the Wicked Witch makes a good enemy. She seems smart and she seems determined. And I mean, all the villains are a little over the top sometimes, but I have a feeling that she's going to be a really good adversary. I mean, if you're going up against Regina and somebody else, then I think you're really going to have to be able to back up your words. So I'm really excited to see how powerful she is and how big of a web she's kind of throwing. You know, like we were wondering about what interest she has in Snow White's baby. I think it's going to be sort of like a massive long con. And I'm really excited to find out what that is going to be.
Yeah, I have this odd notion of why she wants the baby. But let's get to the first things first. So during this time, there's the Wicked Witch of the West talks about her connection with not only Cora, who we discover is her mother, but with Rumple, who she's crossed paths with at some point in time. We don't really know the whole backstory behind her and Rumple. We just know that basically the Wicked Witch of the West came first. She's older than Regina, but she was left in Oz. And we don't really know why. We don't know who her father is. So we only have bits and pieces of her story. But we do know that there's a connection between her and Rumple. The last scene that we get is of the Wicked Zelina. Let's call her that, because man, saying Wicked Witch of the West repetitively is going to get like tedious. So Zelina is in some farmhouse, oddly enough, in Storybrooke, not Kansas, and she goes and brings some food out, and she has Rumple. And Rumple says, "You should have never brought me back." And when he's talking, he is only talking like the Darkling, not like, or the Dark One.
Yeah.
Not like Rumpelstiltskin in any way. He is strictly the Dark One. Now, in the real stories of Rumpelstiltskin, he always wants to steal a baby.
Right.
So what if she's bringing him Snow White's baby for this purpose?
That's cool.
I hadn't
considered that factor, but I will tell you that the fact that you were watching him doing the Dark One Rumple voice without the gold makeup was scary as hell. Like, that was just like, I was like, oh my god, like, I don't even know what to make of that character. Like, I just don't even know. Like, I just felt like, and especially since he was just sort of nonsensically, what was he repeating? It was something that was also just scary in what he was repeating, too. I was just like, wow, this is like a whole new level of, I'm not so sure if you want to let him out of that cage. Like, that's how spooky I thought it was.
Yeah, it started to get me wondering whether the Rumple that we know was kind of like locked away or destroyed when he got stabbed with the Dark One's dagger, and somehow the Dark One survived all of that. Like, yeah. It had me wondering what exactly happened in that encounter between him and his dad and the Dark One's dagger.
Yeah, because I didn't feel like it was an act. I was looking at that going, is there anything in there that's left of the Rumple that Belle knows and loves. Like, I felt like, oh my God, there's nothing in there anymore. That's what scared me with it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it will take to get Rumple back to who he was, or if this will now be the Rumple we have to deal with, which is really scary. I like the old Rumple. This new Rumple's not cool.
I am just glad to have him back, though. I won't say that I was, like, super surprised, because I had a feeling, like, you just don't get rid of Robert Carlyle, you know what I mean? And yeah. So I wasn't, like, entirely surprised that he was back, but it's such a relief, because I think he adds so much to the show. But I think you guys are right. Something's definitely up with him, and, I mean, he's not going to be happy being in a cage. He's going to be pissed, and I have a feeling that he's just going to take it out on everyone.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where this all kind of takes us with Rumple and the interest in Snow's baby and her just being able to pop in and out of wherever she wants, because she is really powerful. You know, and again, she broke the blood magic. So Regina's blood magic's not going to work. They're going to have to find another way to keep things safe. Otherwise, it's just not going to be functional. They'll never catch her. So there's that. So do you guys have any other thoughts about this episode of Once Upon a Time?
Well, thinking about Rumple and how he supposedly taught the Wicked Witch, Selena, her magic, it makes me wonder where Glinda is going to have learned hers. Because we know she's coming. And did she learn her magic from Rumple, or did she learn it from someone entirely different? Like, it's kind of got me starting to wonder where Glinda fits into this whole situation, too.
Or heaven help us if she's, like, another sibling.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I'm waiting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are we going to have a sibling for every... Excuse me, are we going to have a sibling for, like, every compass point? I'm curious.
Or every witch in the history of stories is all, they're all sisters.
They're all related to Cora. She gave birth to them all, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would venture to guess that Glinda learned her magic from someone else just because Rumple, when he was teaching Regina, was very adamant about, like, I mean, it was dark magic. It was bad things, ripping hearts out and stuff like that. So I think Glinda's going to be learning it from someone else. And that in itself, that question is really interesting. I wonder who that could possibly be. I don't even know if I have a guess, to tell you the truth.
I'm wondering if when we get the flashbacks in, I think it's episode 18, because we get Rose McGowan back as a younger Cora, I'm wondering if this is where we learn about Zelina and who her father is, and maybe a little bit about Glinda as well.
Yeah, I'm really, like, I have no clues as to who her father is. I seriously do not think it is Rumple. I don't believe that for whatever reason, but I don't have a better idea as to who it could be.
Okay, crack theory. It's the not-so-magical Wizard of Oz.
Oh, my God.
Which is why she's in Oz, is because she stayed with Daddy.
Professor and Marvel. Mommy that's so great.
Like, total crack theory, but it was
Well, that's
funny.
What Wicked is, in a sense.
Right.
The backstory is that, and then, yeah. Because they do have to rationalize why she's green as well.
True, for sure.
It'll be interesting. I don't know. So if any of you guys have crack theories about who this daddy could be or where Glinda learned her magic or any of the things that we've talked about tonight, please make sure you leave them in the comments. We always love seeing what you guys have for theories because I honestly am running out at this point. I don't even know where to go next. So that wraps up this episode of Onceable. Thank you guys for listening as always. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.